This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. It's Bill Bartholomew here with you, as I am for new episodes every Tuesday and Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, ripodcast.com, or wherever you like to listen. Okay, today we're going to get into an issue that kind of began to percolate, not only here in Rhode Island, but on a national scale as well in certain pockets, and that is a dress code for lawmakers. And this is something that began with somewhat of a dispute, I guess, between Rhode Island Senate President Dominic Ruggiero and freshman Senator Jonathan Acosta, the progressive candidate that emerged from Central Falls. And Senator Acosta pushed back on the notion of a dress code, saying, hey, look, a suit and tie and sort of this kind of commonplace uniform that is being proposed by Senate President Ruggiero doesn't represent me, and it certainly doesn't represent my constituency. And so this back and forth occurred. I'm going to read you right now. This is from the Providence Journal, Kathy Gregg. This is all the way back on March 23rd. The Senate dress code survives attempts by new lawmakers to scratch it. Define appropriately dressed. Should Rhode Island senators be required to wear blouses, dress slacks, and collared shirts with accompanying jacket when they gather at the State House or anywhere else to do legislative business? A new generation of mostly younger senators said no on Tuesday when the sartorial debate that began in a Rhode Island Senate committee last week continued in the full Senate. But they lost their fight to eliminate the beefed up new dress code from the Senate's rules on a 29-7 vote. Okay, so fast forward, I was on WPRO as a guest, actually, a couple of weeks ago, talking about this issue, and I brought up the point of, hey, you know what? This is one of those situations where maybe no one's right. And the reason why is because the boxy men's warehouse look that is being proposed by Senate President Ruggiero doesn't necessarily convey confidence or professionalism, and perhaps the attire being proposed or being worn by Senator Acosta and others is able to, maybe with some modifications, convey a degree of professionalism and confidence that is not conveyed if you're wearing an oversized boxy suit. In other words, nobody's right necessarily. It's an individual choice, but also going with an outdated look that conveys insurance salesmen doesn't necessarily convey confidence any more than something that may be considered business casual or relaxed attire. So joining me today here on the Bartholomew Town Podcast is attorney Doug Hand. Now, he's a partner at HBA in New York. And full disclosure, he was my first boss when I was in New York working for HBA at the time as an assistant. And I learned a great deal in my time at Hand Baldishin and Associates there in Midtown Manhattan. They are a media and technology law firm. And Doug Hand is one of the premier fashion attorneys in the United States. He teaches, he writes books, he has his own podcast. We'll get into that a bit in the conversation here. But more than anything, I was curious about his take on what's appropriate dress for a public official these days. And, you know, here in Rhode Island, I think people have a decent sense of fashion. But when you go to that New York Midtown perspective, you may be able to have a different take on why business casual or culturally appropriate wardrobe conveys a more professional vibe than, say, again, I hate to use it because I've never even been there, but that men's warehouse sort of look. Okay, so today we welcome in Doug Hand, Hand Baldishin and Associates, here to the Bartholomew Town Podcast, which you may support for as little as $3 per month by becoming a B-Town Insider. Head to patreon.com/BartholomewTown, where you'll receive exclusive content at our $10 per month level. That's patreon.com/BartholomewTown. With that, Doug Hand on a dress code for Rhode Island public officials. All right, so today we're talking about a conversation that has really percolated in 2021, but it's sort of been floating out there beforehand, and that is this notion of a dress code inside the halls of government. And I think it was about a month ago, I was on the radio, and this after State Senator Jonathan Acosta here accused the Senate president of either being racist or out of touch in requiring that everybody show up dressed exactly like the Senate president, essentially, which would be in a sort of an old school suit. I made comments that got some attention when I suggested that wearing a suit and tie, if it's boxy and not color coordinated and some of the other things that we see up there in the State House, doesn't convey professionalism or confidence any more than business casual may. So today we have the one, the only Doug Hand here broadcasting from somewhere in New York on the Long Island City pipeline. And we're going to get into this issue. So Doug, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hey, it's great to be on here and reconnect with you, Bill.
Absolutely. So this notion of professional wardrobe, it's something that you specialize in, broadly speaking, as a fashion lawyer. You write and teach on this topic as well. And it's evolved over time to a point now where there's a lot of options that people have that go outside of the traditional suit and tie, boxy suit and tie sort of look for men. Can you just sort of set up your experience in this field and what it's been like for you over the last decade plus? I mean, really, actually much more than that now, 15 plus years of sort of working behind the scenes in this field.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, 25.
Holy Moses.
Would be accurate. Yeah, I know. But no, I came up and, you know, finished law school in the 90s. And so I really have seen a decade to decade shift in the what I'll just call business casualization of professional appearance. You know, that being said, and the American Bar Association, you know, greenlit me to write a book on this subject because of these shifting norms. You know, I still do think, because it sounds like you agree with, that looking professional, certainly as a lawyer, certainly as an elected official, is important. You know, it's an important element to honor your constituency, to honor the profession on some level, and also just, you know, your client has a certain degree of expectation about it. But what it means in this day and age, you know, is pretty different for different people. And I can speak mostly to menswear, but, you know, womenswear being fraught with other elements. But, you know, the suit is certainly not dead. The suit has a place, and I think will always have a place in the wardrobe of the professional. But the suit has to fit, and the suit has to, you know, I mean, suits are made of many different materials, many different cuts. Just because it's a suit doesn't mean it connotes professionalism or respect. You know, clowns wear suits, and carnival hucksters wear suits. A suit can be something that actually undercuts, you know, confidence in someone. So, you know, I think that's a good, I want to let you ask questions rather than me monologue, but I think, you know, I'm a pretty astute student as well as professor on this subject. Also teaching at a couple of law schools, NYU and Cardozo Law School here in New York.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that notion. And it's fascinating. I know I had an experience where for a few years, I was on this television program up here called A Lively Experiment that is basically a political roundtable of, you know, you get an elected official, you get somebody who leans left, somebody that leans right, you put them at a desk and talk about politics for 30 minutes live. And I'd show up in a suit and tie. And at one point, one of my mentors up here, who's sort of a well-known advertising agent, called me up and said, "Hey man, you've got to lose the suit. I mean, don't you have a jean jacket, or, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this because you're not selling yourself." So that planted a seed in my head that sort of has remained, where, you know, you keep up with the trends and you have to reflect yourself as best as possible. If you're trying to imitate something else, that's where you get into trouble, especially if you're imitating it in such a way that you're either, frankly, cheaping out or just not paying attention to what's going on. I suppose that feeds into your notion that it goes beyond the suit. Now the suit has a place, but it's really about bringing out the best in an individual more than anything else.
Yeah. Look, I think our choices in personal presentation as they relate to apparel, you know, and accessories that do show up are very meaningful. I do think that there are so many options within tailored clothing that you can wear a suit, or you can wear, you know, what I'll call an odd jacket, meaning the same as a suit jacket, but it just doesn't pair with the trousers, in many, many different ways and really communicate yourself. Even if that self is somebody who people might think of as a rugged jean jacket wearing guy, there are suiting options for them. So, you know, I'm not so down on the suit. All I think is that tailored clothing has found its way into what I'll call casual wear. And tailored clothing, as the name implies, really means clothes that fit well, you know? And so again, back to your example of ill-fitting, you know, oversized, big and tall, double XL suits on gentlemen who may not be double XL. Those don't do the trick for me. Those don't, you know, help instill confidence, and they certainly don't put the wearer forward as exemplar of personal, unless those are kind of sloppiness, right?
Right.
Tailored clothing can be a knit sweater, right? But that just, you know, has a bit of a lapel, sort of evokes maybe that sport coat, but isn't a sport coat. It's a knit. It doesn't need to be a hoodie, you know, or a Slayer concert t-shirt to be comfortable and casual, right? So, you know, I do have lines, but I like to think of them not as bright law lines, gray areas, but where, you know, there are things that you might consider a suit that I wouldn't necessarily consider a suit, but that could totally nail, you know, elements of your personality and look very, very professional without looking stiff, without looking like your grandfather, and without, you know, sort of, I guess, encroaching on what you feel, you know, your own choices versus choices that someone else is making for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's particularly interesting coming out of the pandemic. I had an interview for my television program this morning, and it was funny because the guy who was on the show said, "Hey, look, this is probably the first time I've done any media appearance not in sweatpants since February of 2020. And he actually literally did not have a belt because he didn't know where his belt was. So adjusting post-pandemic, I guess that's another pivot area where people who are used to, at least from the waist down, sort of remaining in pajamas are now going to, maybe they're going to say to themselves, wow, you know, part of my productivity was being comfortable. So there's also that element as well, where you're conveying professionalism through how you look, but also how you behave. If you're physically uncomfortable, if you're overheated, if there's something that's throwing you off, maybe through the pandemic, we've learned that there's an element of fitting and material and comfort that is important to embrace as we move out of it.
Yeah. I mean, look, clothes, your choices in clothes should make you feel confident, not the opposite. So that is extremely important. And it's hard to feel confident when you are overheated, when you are uncomfortable, when you've got a belt buckle digging into your gut. So there are elements of traditional tailored clothing that you know, are not as comfortable as others, right? And that's where I think we've seen some interesting pivots. You know, there are things that have been around for centuries called DAC straps on pants. And they basically make it so that you don't need a belt. I mean, a belt is a relatively new phenomenon. Most, I'll say men, because, you know, it was men that were wearing traditional tailored clothing when you were talking 19th century, 18th century. They wore suspenders. Suspenders were, you know, very de rigueur well before the belt. And suspenders are actually pretty comfortable, particularly when they're, you know, there's a bit of elasticity in them. Which may sound more formal to you because we now look at that as kind of throwback dress. But I have seen certain brands that take some of these elements, these traditional elements, DAC straps, which are to most men may think of them when they tuxedo pants. They are on either side of the pants that can, you know, they just adjust the waist to the pants themselves as opposed to artificially modifying the pants through a hard leather strap that has a metal buckle on it. And to wear these things might, for some of the, I don't know, traditionalists when we're talking 21st century dress, look like casual wear, can look very, very sleek, very, very stylish, and still very much be within the realm of tailored clothing, making one look professional.
All right, folks, this is getting real. The time for talk is over. From iron workers to engineers, business owners to biology teachers, Rhode Islanders believe in the power of offshore wind. Together, we're cleaning the air and creating jobs right here at home. Our goal of 100% renewables by 2030 is in sight, and the future is bright with Rhode Island a real leader in America's emerging offshore wind industry. So, what makes you a Revolution Wind believer? Join us at revolution-wind.com/itsreal. That's revolution-wind.com/itsreal. Let's go. The other element of this that keeps coming up time and time again here in New England, but also across the country, I think it was in Minnesota or Chicago. I should have had the article in front of me. I didn't print it out. Where this same conversation around professional wardrobe inside the halls of government had come up is the cultural element of it, where folks here in Rhode Island, particularly amongst a slew of newly elected, more progressive-leaning Democrats, are saying, hey, look, what you're suggesting we wear is a white person's business uniform, and I am not able to represent my constituency properly by conforming to your apparel guidelines, so to speak. How does that bridge get navigated in a way that is that honors everything that we just discussed, but then also honors the cultural intricacies and preferences of particular communities? I mean, that's obviously a very specific question on a one-on-one basis, but just very broadly speaking, there's a way to bridge those two things, I would assume.
I think the bridge, Bill, is formality, which is to say, I don't care what someone's wearing if it's got the requisite formality in whatever culture they're from. You know, the kimono, to just take one example, is an extremely formal garment, much more formal than Western dress. You know, there are a couple of menswear stores in Tokyo where they have one floor for tuxedos, traditional Western tuxedos, which is above their traditional suiting store. And then above that, their most formal floor is full of kimonos. You know, so there are many different areas of cultural dress that I think should be considered appropriate to both represent your constituency as well as, quote unquote, honor the forum with which you are doing that, or in which you are doing that, rather, that don't look like an investment banker. You know, everything from sarongs to kimonos and hijabs, and you know, there are a lot of instances, and I think that the bridge is formality. If the wearer is wearing it with the requisite formality, again, kind of back to my hoodie and Slayer t-shirt, you know, there's no formality there, right? But if they are exhibiting that, to me, that strikes the balance, and that is kind of what they should be exhibiting.
Yeah, that is really fascinating. And I think that's where this broad topic will go from here as we move forward in time, especially as more and more communities are represented in the halls of government or on boards of directors or any other forum in which formal wardrobe is appropriate. And my question is, of course, I was in New York City. I lived there for a decade and have been fortunate enough to travel throughout most of the world. But here in Rhode Island, you know, we have a diverse population, but I don't get to see the day-to-day differences in professionalism that you would certainly see in New York. Right now, because we're coming out of the pandemic, but let's say pre-pandemic, when you were attending or hosting clients, did you find that sort of diversity in approach to wardrobe becoming more commonplace as time moved along?
I think so. I may be a little bit of an outlier because, as you know, my clientele is disproportionately 98% within the fashion industry. So I did have, you know, a lot of very progressively dressed individuals in our offices. But I do think that it's interesting you bring up the pandemic and sort of the Zoom phenomenon. It has really caused people to reconsider the way in which they present themselves. And I have seen on Zoom calls, people in what might look like a robe, but you know, they have explained its provenance. And I think everybody on those calls or meetings, you know, has again determined that shows the requisite, you know, formality that no one here is being disrespected. This wearer is choosing to wear something that they feel makes them look capable and elegant. You know, that's kind of how I get dressed every morning. I want to look capable and I want to look elegant if I can. I always kind of took that from, you know, James Bond always looked capable and elegant, right? And
sure,
he may not be a great example for this because he was always in a suit, but, you know, that was kind of what I strove for. And I think pick your adjectives. I think anyone can pick the two adjectives that best apply to them and then overlay on top of that the requisite formality if you are representing a client or even more so if you're representing an entire constituency. And I think you can nail it.
Doug Hand, he is a partner at Hand Baldishin and Associates in New York. He's a teacher of law, fashion law in particular, host of the Laws of Style podcast, which you can find wherever you're listening right now. What's that been like for you hosting a podcast?
You know, I enjoy the format a lot. You know, I love how you've really taken your podcast in so many different directions. I love just letting the conversation flow. And I have a lot of designers on the podcast, a lot of fashion influencers. And the fashion industry is really in a state of flux. I mean, everything from DEI issues within the industry to issues of ecological sustainability and consumptionism is being called into question, which is a very, very good thing for an industry that is, you know, only fossil fuels outpace the fashion industry in terms of overall pollutants, which is a shocking reality. Wow. When you consider raw material production as well. So we deal with a lot of those issues on the show. So yeah, please check it out. And you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Hand of the Law.
Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits. And 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.